Our next speaker is Beth Gifford. She's a research scientist at the Center for Child and Family Policy at Duke University. She is a health services researcher by training, but has lately been leading several evaluations that involve a variety of children's services, including a school-based nurse social worker program, a national campaign to address high school dropout, and an examination of the link between suspensions and arrests for youth and juvenile justice. She received her PhD in health policy and administration and demography from Penn State University in 2005. Please join me in welcoming Beth Gifford.
So the title of my talk is How Do Specialty Courts Affect Outcomes for Youth in Foster Care? And it's a little nerve-wracking to be talking about courts in front of lawyers. As you can see, I'm a health services researcher by training, so bear with me for the first three slides, and then we'll get into the methods part, and I'll feel a little more comfortable. But the point of my talk today is to examine the effect of several specialty courts on outcomes for a particular population that is potentially affected by the decisions that they make. So we're going to look at family courts and drug treatment courts on the probability of entering into foster care, the length of time kids spend in foster care, how youth exit care, are they leading towards ways that are leading toward permanent situations such as reunification with their parents or being adopted, or are they having particularly bad outcomes such as death or runaway. And in turn, do these differences in the types of experiences that they have while in care, are they having effects on things that could affect their long-term outcomes, such as their education? So why are we studying the courts? Well, the courts make important decisions about state custody, about who's in custody, about how long the kids stay in care and how they exit. But there's differences in how the courts are structured and what happens from when a case comes to the court's attention to when the case is finally resolved can have huge impacts on the family's experience. But yet there's little research that informs us as to how courts should be structured and how these decisions should be made. And so the goal of this research is to lend some insight into whether the court improvement projects that are in place are leading to improvements. So the first thing I thought I would tell you a little bit about is what is a family court? And it's primarily a court that's designed to handle familial relational cases. And as the state of North Carolina, I'll tell you, in North Carolina, it was primarily placed to improve the efficiency of court processes. So it wasn't necessarily to improve the services the families got while in there, but it was designed to reduce the court expenditure. So one of the ways that they did that was through a day one conference, which would be before a case even got heard in front of a judge,
facts
would be handled by a neutral facilitator and resolved. That way the judge didn't have to handle that piece of it. They try to reduce the number of different judges that are hurt, that see a case, and that way to promote continuity and so that the judges don't have to, both to preserve the judges' time so that they don't have to learn as much about the cases, but also so that there's more information in one place about the family's needs. And although family courts have been around for a long time, it was only in 1998 that they started to become in North Carolina. And one thing that's also interesting, and I'll get to this in a moment, is that in North Carolina, they were not placed statewide. They were placed in certain counties. So it started out as a pilot project and then expanded to some other counties. In contrast, we also have drug treatment courts, which were not necessarily designed specifically to improve the efficiency of the court, but to treat families, and so they don't necessarily deal directly with youth who are in foster care, but they do deal with their parents who are at risk for placing their children at risk for being in foster care, and these started in North Carolina in 1995. In 2004, we also started to use this as an intermediate form of punishment, meaning that as part of your of how your case was resolved, you could be court ordered to have drug treatment services. So this chart just shows us the growth of specialty courts in North Carolina, with the axis being the number of counties that have it. So there's 100 counties in North Carolina, and you can see that by 2007 there was about 37 specialty courts in the state. I want to show you one. There you go. So one advantage of doing research in North Carolina is that we have access to a lot of administrative data from the different state agencies. So the North Carolina Division of Social Services has been able to give us a lot of their information on all the children that they serve in the state on foster care from 1997 through 2007. And so we have information including the dependent variables that I mentioned, so how long are they in care and how do they exit, but also why were they placed, what are their demographic information, what are their living arrangements, there's some family background. But I was also able to link this to their education outcomes. So I have information on all youth from third grade through eighth grade in the state of North Carolina, so all students in public schools. I have information on attendance records, end of year test scores, what grade they're in, so are they being retained, as well as free and reduced lunch status, special education status. So we have a rich set of information on these youth. Before we start getting to the outcomes that we looked at, I just wanted to show you basically some descriptive statistics on the kids that we're looking at. So from 1997 through 2008, we observed 67,000 placements. About 40% of the kids were reunified, 20% were adopted, and a relatively small percentage ran away or died, but those are very clear outcomes of poor outcomes. And we consider reunification and adoption to be on the better side, although there are mixed findings as to whether reunification is a good outcome or a bad outcome. However, it does tend to lead toward permanency. So the first thing that we were interested in doing our analyses was whether adopting a family court was endogenous. And by this, we just wanted to rule out the possibility that any outcomes that we'd observe later on are in part because of a backwards relationship. So, for example, if a county had adopted a family court because they already had a huge caseload of foster care kids and they were trying to figure out ways to resolve it, we might start to see a negative relationship with the outcomes that we're looking at, not because it's a causal relationship, but because the direction went the other way. And so all of this is to say is that we first did a hazard model to try to rule out endogeneity, and we're predicting the probability of adopting a family court, the time to adopting a family court, and the time to adopting any of the specialty courts versus our main dependent variables in our future regressions. You can see that that it was the counties that adopted family courts or specialty courts, it was not primarily because of their foster care caseloads. The next thing that we were interested to see is are the courts affecting the probability of entering into foster care? And so we basically did a simple regression of the number of foster care kids in 2008 minus the number of foster care kids in 1997, it's a logarithm of it, versus the fraction of time that they had each of the family courts. And so we were not seeing a difference in the foster care caseloads based on the family courts. But that's not necessarily surprising, because it's not necessarily the case that the courts would stop the entering into foster care. But we'll see in the next case that we might expect that the cases would resolve differently. And so the next step of our analysis was to look at the time youth spend in care, and this is getting at the court efficiency, because ideally youth would spend less time in care and more time in stable family situations. So there's time in care,
The probability of being reunified with your parents, the probability of being adopted, and then again, the probability of runaway or death. And what we observed is that the family courts tended to lead towards outcomes that were more positive. So mean time in care was reduced. They were more likely to be reunified with their parents. They were more likely to be adopted, and they were less likely to run away or die. And we observed the same thing for youth drug treatment courts. They were less likely, they were spending less time in care and more likely to exit in ways that led to more permanent situations.
And then in turn, we were interested in understanding what's the implications of this.
So does it matter that they're spending less time in care, and does it matter that they're more likely to be reunified? And we did a fixed effect analysis looking at all kids who had just been in foster care during some time from 1997 through 2008 and compared their academic outcomes during years that they were in foster care to not in foster care. So a strength of this method is that we're comparing youth to themselves over time, and we're comparing them when they are in foster care and when they're not in foster care. There's a large literature looking at the academic outcomes for youth in foster care, and much of those studies are comparing foster care youth with non-foster care youth. And this study is a little bit stronger in that it's really just looking within a sample of kids. And what we see is that how they exited was not related to their math scores, their reading scores, their grade retention, or their days absent. But during the time that they're in care and the year before and the year after, all seem to be a little bit more stressful and are hurting their academic outcomes. So they have lower reading scores, lower math scores, more grade retention in those years. Days absent is sort of interesting. They were more likely to be absent the year before they entered care. They were less likely to be absent after the years of care. So that was the only one that was starting to go in towards a positive direction. So we thought it was interesting that it wasn't about the reunification and the exit strategies, but it was about the time that they were in care that was troublesome. And so in summary, we didn't find the courts to be an endogenous relationship. We did find it that the family courts and youth drug treatment courts tended to have kids exit in more favorable ways, and that the years in foster care were related to more negative outcomes during education.
Good. Do you have any questions?
Is there any kind of connection between the two courts? So if somebody were in one of the courts, are there communications back and forth between the drug treatment courts and the family courts? Because that could have an important... I mean, it makes a lot of practical difference, but it also might affect the results.
No, it's a good question, and I don't know the answer, and I don't know off the top of my head how many of the family courts have drug treatment courts in there. So how
one family could potentially be in both courts at the same time.
There are rules, though, from the family courts that they're trying to have all of their cases served under one judge. So I don't know the answer, unfortunately.
Would you repeat the question just to
this
thing?
I think recording. I might be out of question.
No, would you just repeat his question for the recording?
Oh, sure. No. So the question was, if there's a family court and a drug treatment court in the same county, does the family fall under the same jurisdiction?
Yeah. Thanks. That was for the recording. Oh, there's another question.
Do you have an entry into care, such as, type of non-treatment?
We do, and we controlled for it, but there were so many different kinds because there's tons of different physical abuse, and so we control for it, and we present it in the paper, but we don't present it. I didn't present it on the slides because it was...
Yeah, I just was wondering if that could also be indicative of how they exit care.
Oh, and we control for it in how they exit care, too. There's a large list of covariates that are controlled for. Right here. So we controlled for their living arrangements, how many information about the removal home, information about their county, so percent, the racial composition, the percent of children in poverty, the health and human expenditure rate in the county. So we did control for trying to isolate that effect.
Thank you.